So recently, I've been reflecting a lot on the COVID pandemic that we all went through together. I was remembering how so many of you shared with me the difficulty of going through illness with loved ones who were admitted into the hospital and you couldn't go with them. You couldn't hold their hand as they went into surgery. You couldn't comfort them if they became anxious during a treatment. You couldn't sit with them and advocate and ensure that they were getting proper care. I think I began thinking about COVID and reflecting on that because in some ways, the moment that we are in now as a parish feels a bit like that, doesn't it? We learned 6 months ago that our spiritual leader, our spiritual father and friend, Father Jim, received a stage 4 cancer diagnosis. And from the time he went out for surgery, we prayed for him, we longed to talk to him, to hug him, to have him flash his smile, or offer advice. For many of you, though, you've been carrying that longing since May of this year, when he left his work on the staff to struggle against this disease, unable to gather with our community for the last 6 months. When you can't be with the one you love who is hurting, it complicates your grief. You see, we are wired to want to connect and be together during difficult times. In fact, scientists tell us that our need to connect is as fundamental as our need for food and water. And this community has been carrying that longing for 6 months as we prayed and we held out hope that we would see Father Jim again, one more time in recovery, bopping as the choir sang one of his favorite songs, or calling out your name when you came into his communion line. When we realized that that was not possible, we found other ways to send our presence to him. We offered prayers and we sent texts. We wrote letters. We sent video celebrating his 50th anniversary, which he loved. As we gathered together a couple Saturdays ago to light candles and engage in water ritual, to write letters and share our hearts in storytelling and heart holding, Dan Gilmartin sent a text to Father Jim, and he asked him if he could feel all the love that was for him in the room. Father Jim replied, "It's overwhelming." And I thought to myself, that makes so much sense, because one of the things that this community is good at is sharing overwhelming love. You share that with the poor, you share that with new visitors and new parishioners, with children and ex-offenders. You share that with those that we serve in our mental health center. You share it with refugees, immigrants, asylum seekers, the disabled community, caregivers, those in grief and recovery. And you share it with each other. And now you have directed that overwhelming love to Father Jim as he has shared his journey, preparing for the final stages of his life. In light of that, we may find ourselves struggling with our faith and what to do about Jesus. The Jesus that we've committed to following, how could he let such a thing happen? And then I was reminded that when we split from Corpus in 1998, many struggled with how Jesus could let the life that we knew as a church just fall apart. And yet, what we've created in these last 25 years has been unmatched by what we've left behind. I don't think it is by chance that this weekend we are called to focus on these readings of this gospel where we celebrate Christ, the King of the universe. And in this reading today, we have Pontius Pilate struggling with what to do about Jesus in moments of crisis. You see, Pilate lived his life wrapped in a world defined by earthly power and related to the idea of kingship in a way that Jesus didn't. For Pilate, kingship meant that you live above the people that you are called to serve and that people become objects and not agents of their own destiny. It meant that you could use violence and fear as a tool to keep people in line. It meant that you could declare yourself chosen and demand respect while disrespecting those who are different, who challenge your authority, who threaten your status and get in the way of your need to hold on to power and control. We have been so fortunate to have a real example in Father Jim for 50 years of what Jesus' kingdom and use of power looks like. I think the proclamation that was brought to him by the mayor of our city captured it beautifully. And I'll read just an excerpt. Whereas through his time, he has fervently envisioned a new church, Father Callan became a trailblazer within the Catholic Church, laying the foundation for women's equality, marriage equality, and religious inclusion before it became popular. Under his vision for a just church, he paved the way for both Corpus Christi and Spiritus Christi to become an outreach church, to serve the Rochester community and beyond. Father Jim's vision set the stage for Spiritus Christi to ordain its first woman priest and founding pastor, Reverend Mary Rammerman, and its current pastor, Reverend Myra Brown. Whereas Father Jim's belief that the church must be a church in action and serve the community through faith and unwavering love has been a constant inspiration, where he wrestled with the notion of, do I follow the rules of my religion or do I follow the ideals of it? Choosing to follow the ideals of his religion and walk the talk. Friends, our community has been served exceptionally well. Amen. Not only did he model after Jesus how spiritual leaders were not to live above the people that they served, but we watched him follow Jesus in his vision of a renewed church where the understanding of power was turned on its head, tackling patriarchy, making sure that the church is a place for all people to find love, to find belonging, to find acceptance. What an incredible legacy he leaves for us to continue. And as we hold both grief and gratitude in our hearts, I think we are ready. I'm toying with the idea of creating an event called A Night of Yellow Roses, where we can gather to honor his legacy. And I'll share more with you about this in the coming days. But in contrast, I think about our incoming presidential administration, and I think to myself, they could take a page from Father Jim's book. To create a country where everyone is welcome, instead of mirroring the kind of world that Pilate wrapped himself in around power, which gives me great concern for the least of those that Jesus spent his life in his ministry serving. In the gospel on our hearing today, we find Pilate posing a question to Jesus. Are you the king of the Jews? A question that will reveal the difference between Jesus as our king and kingship as Pilate understood it. Pilate's question is steeped in the concern that Jesus is there to challenge the power of Rome by simply changing places, thinking that the only way one can challenge the power of an unjust, oppressive, corrupt system is to be a leader that fights earthly power with earthly power. But Jesus had a different idea. As I held the question carefully, I wondered what might Jesus be thinking when this question is being posed to him? How might he define himself in light of it? What implications would his answer have on those that he has been called to have, who have followed him through that present moment that he found himself and throughout history that would come after he was physically gone? Would his mind go back to comparing himself to Israel's first king, Saul, or the more favored king, David? Both were military kings, or would he craft a new understanding and a vision for what kingdom looks like? Unlike these historical kings, Jesus never took upon himself the honor of becoming king. He was called to it in the form of a baby, born into the world with no army, no agenda, no political aim, a cooing, beautiful baby boy who, like all newborns, brings light into this world. In Luke's gospel, the angel Gabriel announced Jesus' kingship to his mother Mary when he said, "The Lord God will give to him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there will be no end." Now, Jesus more than likely reflected on the words spoken over him throughout his life with his family. He especially began thinking about this question way before Pilate asks it in the gospel. If you remember in Matthew and Luke's gospel, he's found teaching the disciples how to pray the famous Our Father prayer. And in it, he calls for a different kingdom experience than the earthly one. He prays for God's kingdom to come and God's will be done. God's kingdom come, Caesar's kingdom go. More than hinting that there is something different about what he is called to do, he sets himself apart in the kind of kingship that will define him. And it is why our feast day today is the feast of Christ the King of the universe. Because Jesus' kingdom is not a tribal kingdom for some people and not others, but it's a universal kingdom where everybody is welcome and nobody is left out. Not the foreigner, not creation, not those with different sexual identities, not those with different races or ethnicities, not those with different genders or political parties or religious backgrounds. Everybody has a seat at the table in his kingdom. In his kingdom, gaining power is not the core goal, or even longevity, but sharing love, bringing healing, coming alongside of those who are suffering in need of forgiveness, compassion and justice and strength and hope and faith and mercy is what his kingdom is about. And these are all spiritual characteristics nurtured in Jesus by his mother, no doubt, who had a very special relationship with God. This week, I began reading one of our parishioners, Kathy Carney's book. It's called "Hi, Everybody, It's Me, Buddy." Buddy is her dog and life companion who takes you on a spiritual journey. In it was a chapter on Buddy coming across a tree with a miniature statue of the Virgin Mary. And it was propped above several tree branches and sitting kind of in a flattened part of a tree stump. He begins to have an intimate conversation with Mary, as I'm sure Jesus did on many occasions in his own life, in real time. So here Buddy reflects that the real Blessed Mother hears our hopes and dreams. And he begins to recall all the times that he has heard Kathy, his mom, praying to her, asking for help for angry humans who are mad at each other, and for guidance. Buddy, in his wisdom, credits his birth mom for teaching him how to love others, even when not treated well in return. He recounts her words on these pages, telling him that if we love with all our hearts and might, that it will eventually soften the hearts of the violent and angry ones. In his wisdom, he says, if we don't use love to shake off the hurt we experience, we will just keep growling, keep fighting, and biting each other. And then Buddy shifts to kind of a final thought, giving a counselor kind of vibe, wondering if when dogs struggle and with letting go of hurts, if maybe no one was around to pet them, to brush them, and tell them how beautiful they are. Now, I don't know if the world's growling and fighting and biting that happens in human conflicts we face are because we haven't had enough petting or enough brushing. But it is important to know how beautiful we are. In Jesus's kingdom, everyone is not just beautiful, but we're beautifully made in God's image and likeness. And we have seen that beauty in Father Jim for 50 years, who has reminded us of how important it is to know how good we are. When we know how good we are, then we can see that goodness in others. Many of you have spoken to me about that goodness, the goodness of Father Jim coming to your bedside or the bedside of a relative to pray for them, providing a funeral for someone you cherish, either in the parish or who was connected to somebody in the parish but was an outsider, about feeling at home for the first time when you heard the words, "All are welcome to this table," or were privileged to get a snuggly hug that said, "I am thrilled that you're here." But you know, Father Jim didn't do these things on his own. He was inspired by Jesus and his beauty as a nonviolent, compassionate, inclusive, universal king. So when Pilate asks Jesus, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus answers with a question, not an answer. "Do you say that on your own, or have others told you about me?" Jesus knew that there comes a time when we will have to know on our own who he is to us. Not what people say, but who has he really become in this intimate walk together? To reach down deep, looking over our lives to say, "Yes, I know who you are to me. No one has to tell me. I know what you've done." You see, Pilate was unable to reflect on the goodness of Jesus when Jesus asked this question. He became defensive and a little passive aggressive, saying, "I'm not a Jew, am I? Your own nation and chief priests handed you over to me." Thinking to himself, "How am I supposed to account value to you when you have seemingly been handed over in this situation?" So he was judging Jesus' worth and his value by what was happening to him that didn't square with the notion of being a powerful king. But you know what? Pilate isn't alone. Sometimes we judge Jesus too. If he doesn't use his power as king of the universe the way that we want him to, if he doesn't allow the election, for example, to come out in our favor, or heal an illness that we want him to, or deliver a miracle that we want so desperately, or to help us keep our job, our business, or our home when we want him to. And if it appears that he's just handing us over to our circumstance, how are we supposed to honor him today as king if what he does doesn't square with how we think he should respond or give us the blessing that we are looking for? Well, you may have heard the story of a woman who woke up one morning. She turned to her husband and she said, "Honey, I just had a dream that you bought me a new gold necklace. What do you think that means?" Well, he answered, "I don't know, but Valentine's Day is coming soon. Then you'll know." A few nights later, she woke up after having a dream and she said, "This time I dreamed you gave me a pearl necklace. What do you think that means?" He said, "You'll know on Valentine's Day," he replied. The morning of Valentine's Day came and she woke up again telling him about her dream. She said, "This time I dreamed that you bought me a diamond necklace. What do you think it means?" "Honey, be patient," he said. "You'll know tonight." And that evening came and the husband came home with a package and he gave it to his wife, and delighted, she hurried and she opened it and she found a book titled "The Meaning of Dreams." So what do you do with Jesus if he doesn't square with how we think he should respond? We, like Pilate, might wonder in our own circumstances what to do with him. Do we give him our trust like Mary, our anger like Martha, our frustration like the Syrophoenician woman, or our grief like the widow of Nain, if he doesn't square with how we think he should respond? Here's the good news, is that Jesus can handle all of that. He always meets us where we are. And what he invites us to, and those that he's encountered throughout his ministry, is a consistent relationship to be with us. He offers an invitation In Matthew's gospel, the invitation sounds like this: come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your soul. In John's gospel, the invitation sounds like this: if anyone is thirsty, let them come to me and drink. Come to the waters and take up the covenant of loving devotion for you. Jeremiah's invitation is that of our God will refresh the weary soul, and replenish all who are weak. This is the kind of universal king that we serve and follow. A king who invites us to learn so much more about him than the signs and wonders that he can perform. The truth is that no one understands suffering and pain and grief like Jesus, and no one understands new life and faith in God like Jesus. And as I thought about his invitation to learn from him, I reflected on what I have learned on that relationship journey. As I hold both grief and gratitude in my heart, and I invite you to take a minute to do the same as you look back over your life with our King Jesus. So in 59 years, I learned when I lost my parents, my grandparents, my husband, and many young relatives and friends, that Jesus could be a strengthener of my heart, a friend, a healer, a provider, a redeemer, a lover of my soul, a savior and companion like no other. When I had my children, I learned that Jesus could be my joy, my hope, my life giver, and my coach. When I became a priest and pastor of this church, I learned that Jesus is a waymaker, a miracle worker, a universal, non-judgmental king that welcomes all into his fold of love and kindness, trusting a group like us to change the world. Think about all the ways that Jesus, our King, has walked with you and us as a community. As I sat with Father Jim, he held my hand to tell me that he was at peace about his journey. I could feel Jesus walking this road with him as the peace was palpable. This week, Reverend Seeley and I visited Bonnie Ulskamp, who was dying. And as we stood at her bedside and gave her last rites, she said, "Pray that I don't linger. Pray that I go soon. I'm ready to be with God." You know, Bonnie knew something that we often forget, and that is that there is nowhere that we can go where God isn't there. Just as God welcomed her into the world when she was born, she knows that God will welcome her into the next world. And that is exactly what Jesus confirms with Pilate when he tells him that my kingdom does not belong here, does not belong to this world. And that's right. God's kingdom is a universal kingdom. It's a kingdom that stretches from the Big Bang that set life on its course billions of years ago to a kingdom of heaven on earth where we are instructed to care for and love one another, to a kingdom of eternity where our Most High God dwells to welcome us home as good and faithful servants when we rest from our labor, our Alpha and our Omega. As Jesus acknowledges his kingdom, Pilate concludes by what he thinks is a gotcha moment. "Then you are a king," he says. And Jesus answers with a strong declaration of what it means to follow him. He says, "You say I'm a king, but for this reason I was born. And for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice." So what is the truth? If we believe the words of Jesus today, then the truth is that each of us is born into this world to testify to this truth that Jesus speaks of. He knew that he might not make it out of Jerusalem alive to go back to his family of believers and friends. He would now have to trust the legacy that he left behind. He was relying on his followers, his disciples, his friends, to cherish all the moments and memories that they carried in the ways that he poured into them. and to use those memories and those teachings to create a better world based on that truth. The truth that love conquers all, that peace is possible, that God is always with us, for us, and at our side. And as we continue to follow this King of the universe, our Jesus, to make our world as hopeful, as bright, as beautiful, as kind and loving for all people. Because like the disciples, we have come too far together with our King to give up now.